When we look back in time at the biblical scriptures, these stories in the Old Testament and older scriptures of these interactions with these heavenly bodies. These talk about encounters with cherubs, encounters with angels, encounters with Our Mary. The Vatican have been a bit naughty and not told the truth. They've took the information, twisted it into some religious connotation, and popped it into the Bibles. And that's been gone on and gone on over the years. So what is it when you're in, you know, what they're basically saying is that if they've turned this into the representation of the Holy Spirit, then what is the Holy Spirit? You know, and should we allow it in? And should we want to experience the Holy Spirit? This is the Spirit of God. But what God? Which God? What we are seems to be the evidence is that we are an experiment.
Right now on Higher Journeys with Alexis Brooks.
I am so delighted to have a friend back on the show, which we have not seen the likes of, at least I haven't on this show, for quite a few years. His name is Mr. Steve Mera. He is what I affectionately call the hardest working parapsychologist on the planet, perhaps. Sorry, guys. I know there's a lot of hardworking ones out there, but Steve, you never, never take a break, sir. I'm so happy to have you back. And there's a lot to get to in so far as the high strangeness on this planet. So welcome, and can't wait to hear from you.
Thank you for having me on the show, Alexis. It's lovely to be returning. It has been some time. Since last time we talked, we've been conducting research and traveling and experiments and releasing scientific papers as well now, which is also interesting. So
indeed, you are. Well, listen, I want to get right to it because we've got a lot to cover. You emailed me when I reached out with a little request to have you back on the show, and you said, I know exactly what I'm going to talk about. Latest research on early communications with NHI, that would be non-human intelligence, and how it connects to our secret space program. Now, we're also going to talk about Vatican secrets, a lot of secrets, right, that we're being kept from about the phenomena. But on the subject, let's first tackle this early communication. So when we say early, of course, we may have notions of ancient aliens who definitely have invested a lot of time and energy in looking into the origins of where a variety of non-human intelligence may emerge from. But I'm going to go back just to the Bible. Now, as sacrilege as it sounds, Steve, there have been references that have been documented that there have been alien presences both in our Old as well as New Testaments of the Bible, as well as the Quran. And I don't know if you're familiar with Reverend Michael J.S. Carter, who has been on Ancient Aliens. He wrote the book Alien Scriptures, Extraterrestrials in the Bible. And then he's quoted another reverend who wrote a book in 1968 called The Bible and Flying Saucers, Dr. Barry Downing, back in 1968. So we've got a lot of evidence here, but are we saying that this goes back even farther?
Wow. Okay, well, you know, what I'm going to do, during our conversation, your narrative is going to change very quickly. And what's really good, actually, is that we are living at this moment in time, one of the biggest differences, now changes in the subject in regarding the shift of the narrative. And that's exciting. When we talk about the phenomena as a general, when we do our research and go back as far as we can, we end up running out of records. The phenomena predates documentation. That is plenty of evidence all over the world for that. So really, we're not dealing with something. It's a new phenomenon. It's always, always been here. Secondly, the process of how this was digested by many, many different cultures from different countries had their own spin on it. And the phenomenon adapts to it because the phenomenon evolves and learns and adapts, and it likes to be comfortable in regarding its identification. Numerous different countries will have, say, Middle East, it will be the jinn. You know, in Norway, it's the small rock people. In Ireland, it's the fae. All over the country and all around the world, We have these slight variations from place to place. Instead of tracking the mask, because the phenomena presents itself in multiple ways. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you just want to look at the UFO entities, there's over 3,000 various ones, okay? And we're supposed to believe they're coming from 3,000 various planets, traveling the vast distances of space to come here using exotic technology and to visit us. And sometimes crash, blow up, or drop things, fall off them. And you know, and I love that because it's quite comical. However, instead of tracking the mask, we track the phenomena. The phenomena has been doing the same thing, no matter how they look, no matter how they present themselves, no matter what they're called, the phenomena never changes. And the thing is that everybody in the world has put their own narrative to these and believe them to be various different things. However, when we start to look at the big picture, we obtain data from something which is referred to as the CRS system, which is it's a modern day AI system. Now, Jack Vallée tried to do this back in the late 60s. And he got some bits, but it wasn't really that much achievable because the technology wasn't as good back then. But now, 3 years into this particular program study, CRS system, using AI, 3 years of information was plowed into this computer, one of the best AI computers in the world. And they put every single microscopic detail in there in regarding the paranormal, parapsychological, supernatural, demonological, the cryptids, the Bigfoot side, the more cryptozoological side. They put into all these aspects of Earth phenomena, the UFO phenomena, everything you can possibly think of, and the sub-subjects, and so on and so on and so on. And they threw it all into this computer. It took about 3 years. And then eventually, after they realized, okay, we can't fill this up with any more, let it calculate, let it do its work and try and figure out what's responsible. What is, you know, what is it? What's it represent?
Right.
And they were expecting reams and reams of information to come out of this computer. And it didn't actually. Actually, only really printed kind of one sheet. It was really surprising. But what it said was really interesting. He said that the computer system found so much connectivity between the various phenomena around the world, be it the cryptids, the paranormal, UFOs, you name it. It considered it the source. It said the source. Whatever the source is. Now, is the source God? Is the source some type of higher entity, some energy, an intelligent energy? We don't know. I mean, it does have godly powers. So is this true God that is presenting itself in multiple ways? Secondly, it also went on to say that the phenomena as a whole, representing everything, which is obviously, it's a massive word, isn't it? You start looking about what that really consists of. It said that the phenomena has the capabilities of creating physiological constructs. I'm a physiological construct, the chair is, the table, the room, but it has the capabilities of creating physiological constructs, which means it doesn't necessarily have to be physical in nature. So in other words, it's saying the phenomena represents a metaphysical phenomena from physical when it wants to be. And this is exactly what we see in the UFO phenomena, the paranormal, even the cryptids, you name it. You know, if we take just, you know, the real people around this world that are having these experiences and they are legitimate, then we have to say there are billions of variations. In fact, in 1977, you know, just before Jacques Vallée started working with Hynek came to a special meeting. And this is at the closing, really. And he said, look, I do not believe there's enough evidence to support there are extraterrestrial in origin. And this was at a time when Project Blue Book had listed the variations of the UFO phenomena, and it was increased over 12 million variations just in that. Jacques Vallée also reported at that time that His work demonstrates that this phenomena deals with absurdity, and it's done on purpose. And he believed it was a psychological warfare, in a sense of speaking, on humans. And absurdity means that you'll experience something that you just, what the hell is that? I mean, it doesn't fit into any known, in your mind, it just doesn't fit. It's a square peg in a round hole. It could be a banshee, it could be a demon, it could be a strange creature walking down the road, a 6-foot figure, it's pink. You know, so many different things. And it's done on purpose because it wants to create absurdity, because there is no blueprint for this. There is no modern blueprint for this. It creates exactly what it wants to create. Sometimes it will obtain information from this, from the observers, and fit it to them. So basically it's molding the experience to them so that they'll experience what they might want to experience. This is what happened in early days regarding our ancient ancestors, and in the biblical times when we were referred to as angels and cupids and cherubs and Our Lady.
Yeah.
Now, the problem for us here, when we look back in time at the biblical scriptures, these stories in the Old Testament and older scriptures of these interactions with these heavenly bodies. But the good thing for us is that people have accessed the archive information at the Vatican. One person is Professor Diana Pasulka.
I was just going to mention Diane. She's done extraordinary research in this regard. Yes.
Amazing. And now it's my dream. I mean, she's lived my dream. I mean, to have, you know, to be allowed access to the Vatican. The Vatican is not a church. It's not a temple. It's not a church. It's a library. It's like the ancient library of Alexandria. This consists of 53 miles of library underneath it.
Underneath, yeah.
We see nothing of that. She had access for a few days and was granted, unaided, she was allowed to go where she wanted to go. Like, oh my God, that's exactly my dream come true. And she did what I would actually do. I went to the source information to these stories, such as, you know, Francis of Assisi, Teresa of Avila, and many other ones. These talk about encounters with cherubs, encounters with angels, encounters with Our Mary. Now, when she started to look at the source, the original material, she realized the Vatican had been a bit naughty and not told the truth. Because they took the information, twisted it into some religious connotation, and popped it into the Bibles. And that's been gone on and gone on over the years. The original story, Teresa of Avila was a small creature, roughly about 2.5 to 3 feet tall, was non-human intelligence, and she didn't have a good experience. It was a very similar to a medical type examination that abductees report, which are very traumatic, that take place on some of these strange locations or crafts. She documented that in her own diary. They took that and turned it into the cherub. The cherub was the entity. Now, further along, what they tended to do is alter perception of that. And this thing it thrusted into her, which wasn't very nice, it was a horrific experience for her. This became cherub's dart, or cherub's arrow, or Cupid's arrow. It's the same representation. It's hidden in plain sight. The cherub then started to be seen in connotation to her and statues and, you know, paintings and tapestries. This really represents the phenomena. Then it's changed its appearance more currently over the last 200 or 300 years to become the dove or the partridge, representing the Holy Spirit. So what is it when you're in, you know, what they're basically saying is that if they turn this into the representation of the Holy Spirit, then what is the Holy Spirit, you know, and should we allow it in, and should we want to experience the Holy Spirit? This is the Spirit of God. But what God? Which God? Or is God a terminology for the source? Church from various different countries are trying to find out.
Let me just interject, because you've given us so much. Now, you have touched on so many things, Steve, that thoughts of what type of a universe we may be living in comes to mind immediately when we talk about what this source might represent. Now, we know that the word consciousness seems to be the ubiquitous term that is used to justify all of what we're talking about here, but is that enough? What I am reminded of, guys, has to do with talk of a simulated reality, a holographic representation of reality, something that can make the millions of phenomena that are recorded so malleable, so flexible, shape-shifting, turning back and forth, interpretations are just as much as the phenomena. Could there be some connection we could make to some sort of mechanical simulation that may be producing these physical constructs and even non-physical constructs?
Absolutely. I mean, we are living in a quantum reality. I mean, the scientists aren't saying this too much, but it's been going on for the last 20 or 30 years in quantum studies, in advanced quantum studies. Now, what they're saying is that nothing exists. I mean, you might be sat there, Alexis, and you know, your bathroom is not too far away. But according to the science, the quantum physicists are saying it doesn't exist. It doesn't exist in our reality until you walk into your bathroom, Alexis, and you visually experience it. You bring it into reality. It doesn't exist otherwise. Right. This is their argument, that nothing exists until we experience it.
Observer effect, of course.
Exactly. So therefore, we are living in some form of constructed, simulated reality, which changes and can be manipulated by the phenomena to interact as it wants to, you know, for many ways in different guises. And they're very deceptive because they have these wonderful one-liners. You know, oh, we're here to save planet Earth. The equality of, you know, I don't know why they land in schoolyards to tell children this all the time. I mean, it's preposterous, but they do. And if you see a human, this is the one-liners you must give them. We're here to save planet Earth and the ecology. No, they've not done anything to save planet Earth. In fact, we've already, and it's just horrible to say, but we've already gone past the point of saving planet Earth. If we press the button today, it won't stop for another 25 years. This is why there are trillions of secret dollars going into programs looking for new planet Earth rather than saving old planet Earth. Mm. And that's here to save planet Earth. So what is it then? Okay, well, we're here because, you know, to save humanity. We care and we worry about humans and what we're doing. Okay, well, they're not seemingly interjecting in regarding the battles and wars that could. And do you know what? Every single year around this planet, there is massive amount of loss of life because of what they do. These people, they're warring over nothing, warring over land we don't own. We adopted it, you know. And the thing is that that's never going to change soon, unfortunately. However, have they intervened? Have they stopped? No. Horrific things go on, and they're watchers. They're observing, they watch, they know that they like to, you know what we're doing all over the world, and yet no intervention takes place. That isn't the case. What we are, seems to be the evidence, is that we are an experiment. We have been adjusted, humans, right from the start to be super limited. Every other animal, every other insect on this planet are better at experiencing the reality around them than we are. We have been super limited right down to this, so that we cannot see what's next to us. We cannot see those other, the pet cat, the dog in the high street knows, you know.
Absolutely. About
we don't. And it's, that is not normal to evolve this way and be super limited. So we've been doctored in a sense to make us blind to the phenomena that we are experiencing. That's done on purpose. It's got to have been done, limited us on purpose. What we can say is that the studies, as we move forward, represents this phenomena is being utilized by numerous different religions. Now, I'm a religious person. You know, I don't have to believe in the Vatican to believe in religion. Religion lies here, you know. And for me, it's about that and not something which is substantial. And they've been utilized. the phenomena for many, many years. If we take an example, Lourdes is the most visited place on the planet in regarding religion, in regarding the sighting of an experience with Our Lady, the Virgin Mary, who appeared in the parts of an interesting geological location, a cave. She appeared in the front part of a cave, and the church said that this apparition of Mary communicated with a young girl, and it's become one of the most notorious visited religious places on the planet. Mm-hmm. However, the source information, again, let's go back to the source information. The source information, the young girl that saw this, she went back to the Vatican and said to them, this is not what I saw. She described as what she saw as, and it is quoted, that thing. She said, that thing communicated with me. It was not a Virgin Mary. It was not an angel. It was nothing, you know, what might be referred to as something religious. However, the church, Vatican, twisted it around to make it. This is happening not just at the Vatican. It's happening all over the world. In Africa, in India, you know, you've got these holy caves where these strange beings, these strange deities were seen, and people go in the thousands to pray to it. Now, I do know that dealing with the subject matter and our experiments in communications with non-human intelligences, yes, we have communicated with them. Nothing to do with UFOs. It was done through experiments around the seance table, where they even to the point of manifestation, mm-hmm. even to the point of small UFOs being manifested.
Absolutely, I'm familiar with it.
You call it UFOs. Balls of light, which are weight, they have weight to them. They will disappear, go through the table, up and down, and then come out and bounce on the table. They're demonstrating us, we are metaphysical. We can be solid when we want to be, and we can skirt your reality. UFOs skirt our reality. We keep seeing UFOs all over the videos and CCTV footage from police and army and military. And we see these entering, into water. There's no wake because they're skirting our reality. We see them, but they're not fully in our reality to experience the physicalities. Mm-hmm. No sonic booms, no splashes, no wakes. No wakes when passing nearby aircraft sometimes, like two boats in the ocean. They skirt our reality, just like the giant triangular objects that were seen over the Phoenix. I joined at the Phoenix Lights, you know, March 97. Those things were shimmering. They were skirting our reality.
Absolutely.
This is a big problem for us.
If you're enjoying this episode, along with all of the subjects that we cover here on Higher Journeys, then I invite you to join our members-only community on Patreon, where we go even deeper into the conversations with the guests that you know and love. Not only does your membership ensure that we can keep this work going and growing, but you'll also get immediate access to our exclusive after shows. Get up close and personal with the guests of the show, along with many other member perks. So click on the link below to join now, or visit higherjourneys.com, where you'll find the Patreon link. We'll see you on the journey. Thanks.
Right. I just wanted to interject. I couldn't agree more, Steve. I mean, look, we use the term, what they tend to be doing is bending the laws of physics. But now the bigger question becomes, are they bending the laws of physics, or are they showing us that the physics that we were told exists doesn't exist to begin with? I mean, here's an interesting thing that we really need to think about. Let's think of the thousands of abductions, perhaps millions, that have taken place over the years in which individuals will invariably bring up two points. They communicated with me telepathically, therefore mind-to-mind communication, not just one way, but apparently two ways. And also those that have been taken through quote-unquote solid objects, the beings took me through a wall. That begs the question, not only are we looking at a phenomenon that has the ability to bend the laws of physics, we apparently do as well, because we are accompanying them on that journey, even if it seems to be against our will. So you talk about, you a little while ago, you were talking about our being so, we were maybe bred to be limited, but it also says to me, Steve, that we have the capacity to be unlimited. That is a dormant feature within us. Speak to that if you would.
Well, you know, it's kind of the other, I see it kind of the other way around. You okay. are absolutely right in regarding us and our metaphysical capabilities. Absolutely, there's been experiments in this. And we know that some of these experiences is allowed to have biological matter go through solid materials. These experiments have been doing that for many years. However, when we talk about the phenomena, for instance, taking somebody metaphysically through a wall, it isn't the it isn't the phenomena bending or changing the situation. It's manipulating the reality of the wall. Mm. It's passing through. It's the other way around. If we're in a cardboard box and we need to try and get out, what the phenomena does is it takes one side of the wall out of the box for us to pass through, as opposed from let us change to pass through it.
Okay, fair enough.
Manipulating the reality around us. Some of these objects are seen coming out of the ground, coming out of trees, they just appear as if like they've just come through some doorway. Hence, this is the reason why our project name is called Project Doorway, because it's all about that reality is right next door to us and they can pop in and pop out. Problem is, though, when we're dealing with such a phenomena, we know that the phenomena is right under our noses. It can interact with us any given time it wants to. In fact, it likes to challenge us. Sometimes it likes to target individuals. It likes to connect with people that share an experience or are interested in those subjects. When it does, the door opens a little bit and it starts to interact with them. It's a strange situation, though I wouldn't say it's a religion, but it acts like one because you've got to believe it to experience it. This is why you've got people say, I've never experienced it. Why? Well, I don't believe it all. Well, that's the problem. If you change your mindset to what is capable, what isn't capable, that's the problem. When we open our minds to this, the phenomena goes, oh, okay, I recognize that. Let me deliver something to you. This is why, like me, like many others, have been had experiences just come out of the blue at around about 7 years of age in the bedroom experience. And we know now from our experiments that when we went to the table and we asked these non-human intelligences, can we please ask some questions to gain answers? They said, yes, we could. So we put questions down, 10 of them actually. First one was like, you know, how many dimensions are there, you know, around us? They said 11. You know, that there are multiple realities of this reality. Is that now, of course, we have to take in consideration. Sometimes they can be highly deceptive. They give you some good stuff and then they'll give you some hokey stuff in there sometimes. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It's helpful to try and determine which is which. However, the next time we went to good questions, another 10 questions, we came to the experiment and we sat down and just prior to asking the 10 questions, it delivered it out of the air, always above us for some reason. If you stand up, it's above you. If you sit down, it's above you. This direct voice phenomena, this phenomena, it's like an electronic. It's not male. It's not female because they don't have a male or female voice. It's generated, you see.
Let me stop you for a minute. If I'm understanding, is this something that you specifically were involved in, an experiment in which you were procuring information from this source?
Absolutely. We've done
Tell that. Us more about that, Steve. That's fascinating.
Well, it takes a lot of effort and it takes a lot of time to get the right circle. You've got to conduct this experiment. It starts with seance-like experiments. Mm-hmm. And then what you do is you'll get to the point where you might have some strange things like poltergeist things taking place. But you've got to push beyond that. You've got to get through all that because that's the floating apples, the bad apples to the top of the barrel. You got to get through that. Once you get through that, you get order. And then you can go beyond into intelligences which are non-human. And when you converse, when you pair with them, well, that's really interesting because they kind of, they recognize. Mm-hmm. So they'll communicate back. And if we've got to sustain it at that level, now, it took a long time to sustain it. But once you sustain it, you've got to keep going at it. But you can't do it too often, because if you do it too often, you get this hitchhiker effect. That's why we had to write in these respite protocols into doing this. We're only allowed to do it twice a week, and there had to be like a 3-day gap between.
How long did this last? How long, what duration overall did this experiment last?
9 years it went on for. And we progressed each and every time. However, we had to learn. It's a learning curve for us, for the experimenters, because we don't want to take phenomena home with us. And because it's exciting. Can you imagine being sat there and seeing this and hearing this? You get so enthralled and excited about it. It's like another world. You want to go back for more and more. Well, that's what we did. Unfortunately, that is when the phenomena got under our skin and followed us back home. And all sorts of problems were taking place. This is when we realized we've got to dip our toe into this and then come back out and return 3 days later. This is the process. So we don't have that hitchhiker.
Right. And this is something that's well known to have come from Skinwalker. Of course, the famous Skinwalker Ranch is well known for those. I've talked to individuals personally who have had the hitchhiker follow them home. And it's quite disturbing, to say the least. But so that was very astute of you to know where the boundaries are. Now, do you have these some of the voices on tape?
Oh, yes, we do.
Well, I think we'd like to hear.
they don't sound like it's a female voice, and it doesn't sound like a male voice. It's like generated electronic. It's like an electronic voice.
Is it like an EVP, electronic voice phenomena?
Well, no, I mean, it does actually sound like it's an electronic voice. You know, it doesn't sound like it's a normal human female or male voice. Is because they don't have that capability. When we are hearing other things, male and females, that's slightly different. But we've gone beyond that to the NHI section, to communicating with things beyond that, the normal. And what we found out is, through the experiments and visiting locations, putting it to the test, is that they like to manifest in certain... The UFOs are manifesting. This is why we've had NASA come out 6 months ago and say, we've concluded, guys, we know UFOs exist. We know that they're photographed. We know that they're videoed, they're documented, and sightings. But we cannot conclude these things are extraterrestrial in nature, in origin. That's what NASA said 6 months. Arrow, it's just come out maybe a week ago with their report. This is the UFO's own Pentagon program.
That's right.
What did they say? They concluded exactly the same thing. They don't believe it's extraterrestrial in origin.
I actually, if you let me, Sean Kirkpatrick, who I think is still heading up Arrow, has said he's found no credible evidence thus far of extraterrestrial activity, off-world technology, or objects that defy the known laws of physics. In the event sufficient scientific data were obtained that a UAP encounter can only be explained by extraterrestrial origin, we are committed to working with our interagency partners at NASA.
Well, we're dealing with a two-source thing. We're dealing with a interdimensional or possibly extra-dimensional phenomena, which has always been here, and it has many different guises, and it's intelligent, it evolves, and it likes to interact with individuals. It learns from us. It adapts. Sometimes they get it wrong. Sometimes a UFO will come down. It'll leave physical prints on the ground. There'll be an incident with witnesses. But the UFO has got 1930s round windows and portholes with little rivets on. Now, they didn't get it quite right. Because what people are experiencing isn't. It's a manipulation of the reality. You know, this is the absurdity of it. They do it on purpose, because it doesn't make any sense. And what we are dealing with here, like I say, it goes back a very, very long time. But if we start to look into other areas, I mean, Fatima was another one as well.
Absolutely.
It wasn't the sun. I've got the analysis, actually, of the photographs that Vatican did from the event of 7,000 people who stood there. This thing scared half of them to death because it came rushing down from the sky. And it was a UFO incident. They tried to put it down to something of a religious connotation. No, it wasn't, you know. And there are hundreds, if not thousands, of incidents like that worldwide that is being utilized to put forward and tell us these are angels, these are cupids, these are cherubs, this is Our Lady Mary. That was never the case. Though that when people do experience seeing them, it's because it's already in there and been manufactured in our minds. Therefore, it can utilize these things. This is why they might appear as a nice big 6 foot little, you know, a 6 foot bunny in some cases, you know.
Yeah.
But it's true. They talked about that. The Navajo Rangers talk about.
Absolutely.
Children's animated toys. That they're utilizing, you know, what we might consider the phenomenon to be. And many people will experience that phenomenon in that way. Exactly the same with the paranormal. What I'm getting at here is that fundamentally, it's all one thing. And we've the ones that have gone, that's paranormal, that's supernatural, that's demonological, that's ufological. It's all the same thing. It's just changing its appearances. But if you get rid of all the appearances, throw all the appearances away, and look at the source. What's happening here? Oh, paralysis, manipulation, perception alteration, program memory. It's happening in all of them.
Absolutely.
The phenomenon doesn't change. It's just the mask does. And we now know from experiments when we're dealing with phenomena, we've been to locations where we know it manifests in the utilizing key areas around the planet. And when we, and usually they are quite remote because you tend to like that remoteness. And when you go there and you experience a phenomenon and it interacts, in other words, there's a conscious connection. We've got specialized devices now. These are flow bands. You can fit them on your head. It measures your brainwave activity to your mobile phone on the move. So the days of these big pieces of equipment that have to be plugged into the mains don't need to do it anymore. So we wanted to know what is happening to people when they have that observer effect, that conscious connection. I'll call it Bluetooth pairing between the see a number of people now, and they might go, do you know what? This person here, I'm gonna consciously connect with this person. But what they don't realize is that this phenomena, the craft is not carrying the phenomena. The craft is also
is the phenomena, exactly. We've talked about sentient craft. Yes.
It's all the same thing, and it connects consciously. Now, what's happening to us? Well, this is quite surprising, which we've recently found out. And we never knew, and a surprise, probably nobody really knew. Nolan, you know, he's onto it a little bit, you know. We noticed that when this Bluetooth pairing happens, and it can happen, believe it or not, within 20 seconds, we can lose our discernment to the phenomena. And we think we're in conscious control of ourselves and nothing unusual is happening to us. That's not the case. What happens is, as soon as that Bluetooth pairing effect takes place, our brain waves start to change into theta wave. It comes down and down and slips into theta wave very quickly. Now, theta wave is like when you're sleeping, daydreaming.
Right.
It puts us into a state where we're easily manipulated visually and audibly.
Okay.
That's what it's doing. Secondly, what it does, it causes cognitive limitations. In other words, you won't act properly. How many people have had cameras? Holding the cameras, never took a photo. Why? I don't know.
Right.
Why are you going down the road and something? So you see something and you're an investigative researcher? Why don't you jump out the car? You normally would do. Or why do you have to travel another mile down the road and suddenly go, what did we just see?
Mm-hmm.
This is what the phenomenon does. It stops us from interacting or acting out as we normally would want to.
Mm-hmm.
So it's control. Straight away, they've got us. They're controlled in a mechanism.
Absolutely.
No, we were completely blind to it. Only now, with the equipment that we have, we can see the effects happening to us physiologically and psychologically during these experiences.
Let's bring in the gamma brainwave state. Now, I don't know the order. I know from beta to alpha, etc. But is gamma considered a deeper state of awareness or lack thereof than theta? Because
further on, it's more about the meditational states.
Okay.
It's about breaking the noise down. we live in a reality of all these waves. Okay, what we do is we focus to a certain point, and we kind of suppress the other noise, because it's so noisy. We have to suppress the noise to focus. And when we can focus and suppress the noise, this is why people do it through meditation. You know, there's various different methods all around the world. It's an ancient practice. It's about targeting what you want. Mm-hmm. If you target it well enough, you can see through or sneak peek through the veil. And when you do that, it allows you to communicate with the source in various different ways.
Mm-hmm. People have done that. People have done that, Steve. As a matter of fact, I did a little plug from a protocol that I developed that I actually delivered in a workshop not that long ago, in how to sit in literally two spaces. I'm using it kind of colloquially at once, bridging two worlds, using peripheral vision. It's a way of seeing, not through, you know, looking straight ahead, but really kind of traversing between seeing peripherally and seeing through closed eyes. It's kind of complex, yeah. But the goal in that is to be able to not only bridge the physical with the non-physical, but to peer on command into the non-physical using certain techniques. So it can be done. The reason why I bring up gamma waves is because, you know, I'm thinking of Daryl Anka, who of course channels the entity known as Bashar, has talked about his being tested in as close of a state of when he's in the channeling state as possible. And they measured the gap that he was in a gamma brain state. Mm-hmm. And so I'm wondering if there's a correlation there. Would one be in a gamma state in some of these abductions or encounters or connections when they're connected with the Bluetooth?
It's exactly it. Yeah. I mean, doing it through that process, because when it's coming from the phenomena, they'll take you down to theta to, so that they can control, because you're a random person. They don't know, you know, I'm interested in this person. How are we going to react? Let's get them into this state, so we know that we can control this situation to some degree. However, when it's us reaching out, we levitate it up to, and then when we're dealing with gamma, it's like you're on the edge of second sight, your peripheral vision, because your peripheral vision will always see more than what the cones in our eyes will produce. We're very limited. This is more important, to be honest with you, than what we actually see here.
Oh, absolutely. I agree.
Always has been.
Yeah.
Well, this is how you can see things sometimes in the peripheral vision, because it does that in its own area away from the normal process of the eyes working. And that allows us, obviously, the same process as in, you know, contacting these spirits, entities, intelligences, whatever that they are, that process can be done from us by gaining that procedure, to doing that procedure. And when it comes to the other way around, when they want to do it with us, then they're bringing us down to, you know, to interact with us. And that can happen very, very quickly. And we also know that, you know, that sometimes, because I admit, you know, there are some experiences that aren't love and light. And I've always said, I've always been truthful about this phenomena. All I do, myself and Barry, Barry Fitzgerald, my colleague, when we go and talk about what our work, we just put it on the table, Alexis. We just say, well, this is what the phenomena presents. Mm-hmm. This is what it represents. This is what people experience. We don't have a belief system. We only look at the evidence. Yes, there are people that have nice and good experiences. There are people that have bad experiences. Unfortunately, the bad ones tend to get brushed under the carpet quite quickly and don't get circumnavigated through the internet much. However, the other ones do get a lot of promotion. All I'm saying is that level the playing field and say, okay, well, not everybody's experience. I've had experiences that claim that they've had missing time and had these experiences with these non-human intelligences since the early age, and they've had it going on for 30 years.
Absolutely.
Eventually, they said it's been a wonderful experience. It's been great. They've taught me knowledge. They taught me this, that, and the other. Well, I said, well, when was your last experience? They said, last August. I said, okay. They came back to me about 6 months later and said, we would love, for the very first time, I would love to find out more. I'm sure there's more, they told me. Is there any form of hypnosis? I said, well, we don't really deal with hypnosis because we ruled in a no hypnosis policy in our research because it wasn't 100%. Mm-hmm. And it's actually better to fall on our evidence than hypnosis. However, said, we do can put you in touch with people. And when we did, and she went under hypnosis. Well, she was horrified afterwards because the experiences of what she thought she had last August
were nothing like.
It was a programmed memory.
Yeah, absolutely.
Away from the problematics of this traumatic experience that she had. Now, this is the biggest problem is regarding, because if we're being manipulated, I'm not saying, you know, good experiences don't happen. I'm sure they do. But mixed in that part, it's like a walk down the street. You might meet a nice person. You might meet somebody who's not so nice. But they're all humans and they're all doing, they're all doing what they want to do. This is how the phenomena is. There is no black and white. There is only agenda. And some of that agenda might be, well, we might consider it not very nice. Mm-hmm. Others are wonderful, euphoric experience. You know, and that's why it's so varied across multiple.
So varied, so mysterious. Listen, we only have about 15 minutes left on the main show. We're going to go to the after show. And we're going to continue the discussion about abductions. I want to get a weigh in from you, Steve, as to where you feel abductions are today. Some feel that they're not happening as much. Some feel that they're not happening at all. So we're going to go next door in a little bit. But before we do, here's where I want to leave this loaded subject. Let's draw a nexus between this phenomena, early communications, and who has knowledge of how the detail of what these early communications with NHI were all about. And that would be the secret space program. Let's spend a few minutes on that. How much do they know? Is there a secret space program? What is the best evidence? Now, that's a hell of a way to end the show, but I want to spend a few minutes talking about that. What do you know about all that?
What I do know is that a space agency was born out of communications with non-human intelligences. We wouldn't have had one otherwise. It's as simple as that. If you want to go back to the JPL, Jack Parsons,
yes.
You know, Jack Parsons was communicating bit similar to Aleister Crowley's Enochian Sumerian. We've been involved in that. That is pretty heavy going, that stuff. But we did that. We were visited by one of the big boys. It ripped right through my house and Barry's house in the same night. We got a slap on the hand for doing that. However, these intelligences communicated and started to share information. However, it comes at always a cost. You know, Jack Parsons had to offer some of his own blood. He was told to go to a geological location in the Mojave Desert to communicate with them. The next day, going to work, and, you know, people say, wow, he's just created that. He came in just today. He had no idea yesterday. Comes in today, and he knows how to build it. They got us to space. And it's not just us. You know, it's von Braun and his team, the predecessors to him, the Russians, the Chinese, you know, and it's still happening today. Now, this is why everything that we do when we go into space, we have to pay homage. It's all linked into the secret societies. It's, you know, even the Masons and the Templars. So that it's we have to pay homage. This is why our space programs are called Apollo and all these sort of things. This is why they would go to the moon and they do, you know, the Masonic flag went in first, really, not the
American.
They even did a Masonic, you know, a Masonic ritual there. It's to pay homage. Thank you for getting us to the stars, these intelligences. They even put symbolisms. We have rockets going up every other day, and we're not aware of them. And they've got Enochians, and, you know, they've got ancient Latin. They've got all sorts of strange things wrote on them, very unusual images. Some of them images of representations of non-human intelligences printed on them. You look at the mission badges, they also, but they don't let people know this. You don't want people to know that, you know, when they do and they want to be successful, they have to pay homage because these guys got us there. We would have no space program if it wasn't for non-human intelligences getting there. The same thing applies to David Adair, our wonderful David Adair, rocket genius.
Yeah.
He's a lovely guy, David, and I think the world of him. And when I asked him, David, you know, you made a rocket that nobody had ever seen before, traveled at 8,460 miles an hour. Even the army couldn't believe it. How did you do it? Came in dreams every night.
Mm-hmm. He's told that story on our show.
And the same thing with when he met, you know, our Professor Hawkins. You know, he was doing calculations and velocity speeds and space stuff and stuff, and he had these wonderful equations. How did he do it? Came in dreams every night.
Came in dreams.
What these people are getting, and it's not just that, inventors as well, anybody who's got an impact in society, they're gaining downloaded information. The communications are from non-human intelligences that advancing. They are super advancing humanity for some reason, and that's where we currently are today.
Where do we go from here? And I mean, not just in this conversation, but literally, where are we going from here with all of this? Let's end on this, Steve. And I'm going to have you back. And I think I'm going to have you back with your buddy, Barry. I love these two guys together. My faves. So let's do that. But let's end on this. Of all the experiments that you've done, and the obviously a lot of time and reflection on what the source is, from where does this emanate from? What is it? What is your answer? What is this that's controlling all of this?
I think my personal opinion is we've misidentified what God is. We misidentified it because this is godly power. It's the source. It's always been the source. I mean, don't get me wrong. I mean, you know, the Old Testament will say, yeah, God had his bad days. God wanted blood worship. He did. He smite people. People had to offer their sons to him on a bad day. This is our God, you know, the God we know. No different than the Mayans and the Inca and the Aztec gods. It's all the same gods, all the same thing. And these things are intelligent. Is it all these various different things, or is it one thing interacting on a global basis with multiple consciousnesses around the world? I would lead to say that what we are dealing with is a consciousness that may have been misidentified as a godly power. Because when we look at all the variations of gods, and there are thousands, if not thousands of them, all over the world, and they all have the same godly powers, and they all talk about the same thing, and yet there are so many of them, just like the variation of phenomena that people meet. I would say that it's probably that is the source, is we're tapping the source, that is the thing that's been responsible for interacting with us forever since we've been around.
Wow. It's both an exhilarating thought and a scary one, because it would cause, if this were truly to be taken in by the masses, so many people would be forced to reframe their entire worldview, their entire life, everything that they think. We may be facing that time. Something seems to be coming to a precipice.
Yeah, we're living this time now, but now it's changing. We've got Luis Elizondo's coming out and saying, you know what, I know kind of this has never been something that we thought it was. When this only comes out to everybody, it's going to be a very somber day. We're going to have to reassess our position in the food chain. We're going to have to reassess our position of understandings of religion. And he's absolutely right. Luis, he knows some of this stuff. Other people, these astrophysicists and professors and doctors coming out now saying the same thing, because they've waited for other people. I don't want to be the first one to come out.
Right, absolutely, yeah.
Now it's happening, and now we're starting to see the narrative shift over from the old days of 70 years, of 80 years of secrecy regarding the UFO subject, saying that it's extraterrestrials, vast distance of space. It was very Star Trek episode-y. That narrative has been put out to us on the media all the time. To blindside us. They don't want us to put the dots together and figure out, hang on a second, there's none of that. Mm-hmm. Because it's alarming and disturbing. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, it's very exciting.
I want to go over to the after show, and we only have a short segment over there, but we're going to cover the abduction phenomena. Where is it today? But I also, Steve, want to address the question of, where is the mandate of secrecy truly coming from? Don't answer that here. We're going to take it next door. Steve Mara, Oh my God, I get to know like a walking encyclopedia, literally. And now you do too. So this has been fantastic. As always, you never disappoint. Don't go anywhere. We're going to go next door, guys. Join us, please, for the after show. Support Higher Journeys in the process. And let's keep this conversation going, shall we? Steve Mira, thanks so much. Don't hang up. We're going next door. Thanks, everyone. We will talk to you soon. Take care.